Welcome to part two of our interview with Steve Johnson of Parallel 44.
I want to go back to the working in the vineyard. And again, we're in Kewaunee, Wisconsin, which is about, what, 30 miles or so east of Green Bay?
It's about 20 miles east of Green Bay, about 7 miles off the lakeshore.
But the bottom line is we're not in Southern California, Northern California, Washington, Oregon. So do you have issues with labor getting people, especially when you're pruning? You're pruning in some pretty rough weather.
Right. Generally, we begin the pruning season in February. When you have 8,000 vines to go through, you need to get through them before dormancy breaks. And this year was the most abnormal year that we've ever experienced. You know, we actually had more growing degree days in the month of March than we did in April. I think that's unprecedented for this neck of the woods. So that means the pruning has to be done soon. And there aren't many people willing to stand out in the snow and prune vines in February and March, but that's what's required. We have mechanized a little bit with a pre-pruning device, which then allows us to go back and fine-tune each vine by hand. But after you go through a few thousand vines and your wrist begins to hurt, you know, you realize that you do need help. I hope now with this new program called Vesta, that it's associated with our technical school, where they're offering two-year degrees in viticulture and oenology, we'll be able to get some of those students to assist us because they need that experience for their practicums.
That's fabulous. What school is that? What school offers that?
It's an association that's linked to technical colleges across 13 states, primarily in the Midwest. And the classes are online, but the students do have to do a practical component of each course. So we've had about five students out here in both the grape growing aspect and the winemaking aspect. And so the hope is that this interest continues to grow and that every year, whether we're in the midst of pruning or bottling or fermentation, there'll be a student or two to help us to learn. And actually, I've learned quite a bit from them telling me about what they've been learning in their classes. So it's with modern technology now, we have, I think there's a couple hundred students in the program taking their courses via the internet and then getting their practical experience in vineyards across the Midwest.
That's fantastic. It's great to be able to have that labor available. Most importantly, whether they be people who want to eventually just do it in their basement or want to go and become professionals overseas or here in the States, that's a great way to start in the viticulture world.
Right. I mean, in any industry, you need a skilled labor force. And this isn't grape growing and winemaking isn't something you really can pick up on your own. You do need that instruction. You do need that discipline where you can have a labor force that keeps progressing the industry. Yes, it'll help a lot.
So I want to talk about the AVA. Now, that happened within the last, year and a half or so that this area has been officially designated.
Right. I'd give a lot of credit to Steve DeBaker of Trout Springs Winery. It's about 20 miles from here. He put together most of the documentation necessary for the application, and it became official in April of this year. And through his work and our other wineries in this area contributing to that data that had to be collected, it was finally awarded to this area. And it's pretty amazing considering there's still regions in California, Washington, Oregon, who have not attained that designation. So starting from this point forward on any wine grown in this neck of the woods, you'll see the Appalachian, the Wisconsin ledge on it.
Now, we had talked once before. I'd asked you a question. I'm trying to refresh my memory on this. Why the vintages aren't listed on your label?
Part of it is for a practical reason to save costs on the printing. You know, it's so much more to print a new set of labels for your particular vintages. So you're going to see more of that now that we have an Appalachian. You know, and as like I said before, with the aging of our wines, I think those who really appreciate our wines are going to want to know, am I drinking the Glacier Red from 2010 or 2009? So it was something that we didn't really think about real seriously in the beginning, but now we realize as we get into this further that the vintage date's going to be a more common thing that you see on our labels.
It'll be that much more interesting as you go on, as your future unfolds, to see when you are able to compare these different years.
Yeah, I haven't really done a vertical tasting of wines, but that notion has really appealed to me, and I'm envious of those who have been able to do that. Now, that's probably a little bit more complex or technical than your typical wine drinker, but for those who are growing the grapes, it's what it's all about.
Now, I understand, if I remember correctly, both you and your wife, Maria, were out in wine country in California.
Right. We took our honeymoon out there in 94, and actually we just visited again a month ago with our three children and Maria's sister, husband, and child. And that was fun to reminisce and remember what we had seen 17 years ago. In fact, I remember at our honeymoon, we went to Mandavi's place, and the very circular drive there in front of their place, there were vineyard workers planting vines. And I recall that as we drove in, and I looked at the plate at the end of each row, and it was planted in June of 94 when we were there. So it had come full circle. It was pretty neat to see that.
Yeah, that's very cool. But a lot's changed in 17 years. Of course, a lot's changed in 3 years out there.
Yeah, I would say there's been some change, but it still seems to have the rural character. It still has the look, the feel that, you know, probably sparked the passion for us to begin this.
Did you ever, while you were there, did you talk shop with anybody, or is that something you lay low on?
I did. We had to strike a balance here. Our children weren't quite of the age where they would have the same appreciation that my wife and I would for what's going on behind the scenes. But we did get to kick the tires at several places, and when we were looking and taking the tours, I probably asked a lot of questions where the tour guy was wondering, what the heck are you? Who are you? You know too much about this. But yeah, it was fun to see that in many of those places, they're doing the same things as we are. In the larger places, I was envious of the equipment and labor force they had. But it's fun to see how the rest of the world's doing it, too.
A couple moments where you walked outside the winery, kind of looked around, took a deep breath going, yeah, this is pretty good. I did okay.
There's so much more ahead of us yet that I guess I don't think in those terms too often, but if you stop and think about what was all involved to get going, you do realize that it is a journey, and it's usually a generational journey too. So our kids may not have an interest in this, but it was, again, that generational aspect that really, I think, drew me to begin this in the first place.
Sure, when you got your dad and Maria's dad doing it, and now you have your own kids, certainly it would be nice to see them carry on, especially in an area like this, because you've really started something unique here. It's a beautiful winery, it's in a beautiful area, and of course it pops up in the middle of a lot of cornfields.
Thanks. Yeah, it's something that's unexpected in this neck of the woods. I think it's going to be a more common sight in Wisconsin now, especially with an appellation that we have. But I have put my kids to work out in the vineyard too, so sometimes they enjoy it, sometimes they shrug their shoulders, but that's all part of this way of life that we're in.
Growing up in a vineyard, that's not a bad way to grow up.
No, it isn't. I mean, if you think about it, it's pretty enjoyable. I mean, you really get to learn about process and perseverance, because there are many things that cannot go your way sometimes with growing the grapes, from Mother Nature to the economic times that you have to face. But to see something from start to finish, from the planting of the vines to tending them to the production of the wine to the smile on someone's face when they drink that wine, there's something very, I don't know, integral to how you think about life when you see that process.
I think a lot of that goes back to being a farmer, don't you?
I think so. Yeah, it's just in the inherent nature of this business that you're not just making a widget, you're making something that expresses the area, yourself. It's often hard to put in words, but when you're in the business, I guess you start to appreciate that you're doing something more than just producing a product.
Right. I would say, if I could just throw this in, that I think being a farmer is a very human thing.
It is. Yeah. It's there are some days where you shake your head and go, you know, how can we get through this? This is just such a struggle. Why are there so many obstacles that get in the way? But, you know, it's again, because it's a way of life. You figure it out. You get a bit creative in dealing with the stresses that you have, from the vineyard to the production. And if you've got that commitment, you find a way to do it.
Commitment's the big word, isn't it?
It is. I mean, if you knew in advance what you were getting into, if you planted a vineyard and started a winery, most people would say, I guess that's something to be enjoyed by a visit to Napa as opposed to something I want to personally do. And but you only have to be in it for a few years to realize that, no, this is a commitment that is going to require many of your resources and the resources of others. And if you realize that it is a generational thing, it's a commitment that it's probably easier to make.
Now, the one thing I wanted to get to, we're living in very, very difficult economic times. It hasn't changed a whole lot in the last few years, but again, I come up here to see this building that I would regard as still being brand new. You've added on 4 more acres. You're obviously doing things right, and you're doing business is good, it seems.
Yeah, I'd like to credit my wife for that. The part of the business that often doesn't get talked about is the marketing component. I know with 6,000 wineries in the United States, you know, you walk into any grocery store or wine shop and you walk down the aisle, and if you don't know what you're looking for, you probably won't know where to start. So with that high level of competition, not only do you have to have a good product, but you have to make your product something that people are aware of even before they come into the store. So that component often doesn't get talked about. It often isn't really thought about for those who start vineyards and wineries. They think if you build it, they will come. And sometimes that is true, but a lot of it is, you know, you have to capture the attention of the consumer. And like you said, with these economic times, this is probably the worst time ever really to start a vineyard and winery. But there's no denying that people still want to enjoy life. So if you have a good product and can get the people's attention, I think you'll do okay in this business.
Well, my compliments. I think you've done a great job here because, again, you come down these rural roads and you see this winery pop up out of nowhere. You can't help but chuckle. And then you go inside and you start tasting it and you're still chuckling because it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, did we pick the right place here with our vineyard and winery because it's not on the beaten path? But being kind of a purist here, I did locate this vineyard in what I felt was the prime spot in Northeast Wisconsin based on topography, soils, and climate. If we can continue to spread the word, I think our location will be okay.
Steve, again, my compliments. You and Maria have done a great job, and I wish you nothing but continued success. Thanks for having me by again.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Ray.
Learn more about Steve Johnson at parallel44.com.
Thanks for listening to this program. Watch for our next podcast featuring Elisa Scavino of Paolo Scavino Wines from the Piedmont region of Italy. Cheers.
Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2012.